Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, my partners in the coffee business, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, we have some exciting breaking news related to our next live program that we need to share with our audience. Lots of negotiations, lots of high-level business meetings taking place between Ronald and the other hipsters who run the Sojourn Church Planting Network. And after lots of high-level meetings, we have a location and a date for our next live show. Ron, tell us about Sojourn Midtown. I love that the word Midtown is a invention of the last 10 or 15 years, used to describe that part of a city which is neither downtown nor the suburbs. Hipsters have reclaimed that word. They call it Midtown now. I couldn't be happier. Tell us about the venue, baby.
Yeah, so maybe that's where they got the phrasing. I have no idea. I know that I've been to a few events there and a few conferences there, and Sojourn Midtown is indeed just a fantastic location for the new live show, for the next live show. Basically, an old converted, almost like a cathedral in some ways, in terms of its sort of the look and the feel and the architecture. And it's a really amazing venue. And
another 5 years, it'll be a brewery.
Absolutely.
But until then,
I think it already is. You know, upstairs is where they do the brewery. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So this show is going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. So there's going to be a lot of atmosphere. And again, it almost brings us back to the first Live in Louisville show we did in the small sanctuary with the John Calvin bust, you know. So there's that kind of far reaching history that we are going to be face to face with, and of course our audience will be
as well. Baby, you've already conferenced extensively there, so this is like a home game.
It's like
you.
Going.
I mean, it's like home. Yeah, it's like going home.
Absolutely.
Home turf. Pipe, what's our date for this thing?
If my recollection is correct, it is April 13th, so it's the Monday before this is Together for the Gospel. That's right. Sorry, I get my Reformed gospel-y things mixed up. Yes, Monday, April 13th. So it is actually the day after Easter. So you will be all, listeners will be all, you know, churched up, ready to go, ready to hit the road to Louisville and join us Monday, the 13th of April.
And you know what, Pipe?
And then the next day they can go to endless sermons.
And I think that's worth pointing out that since it's post-Easter, maybe we can get a little post-Easter goodies and swag from people, you know, after the big day. Maybe that can be.
Oh, that's right, baby. That's good. That kind of gets us back to our roots, too.
Absolutely.
Of us shamelessly asking for stuff that we want and having people bring it to the program, which
I would love some unique Easter chocolates and goodies. And you know what? I'll go this far.
Leftover ham.
I mean, boy, yeah, maybe some leftover ham. I'll go this far. I don't think it's too much to ask that we should each get our own Easter basket at some point.
Oh, baby, that would be so nice.
You know?
That would be so nice.
I demand lots of faux grass in mine.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why that's an Easter tradition, but you know, the plastic green grass.
Absolutely.
That lines the basket that the eggs go in, because eggs also very appropriate for Easter.
Absolutely.
So yes, I demand.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to go one up on you. I want some real grass in my.
Oh, baby, I'm going to go one up on you. I'm not going to rest until that hipster church has some real grass framed on the wall.
I'm going to go one up on all of you and say I want an actual Easter bunny in my basket.
That would be amazing.
You know, I want that thing. I want that thing just literally hopping around while we're doing the live show.
Dude, I want old school AstroTurf in my Easter basket.
Oh man,
a little homage to football, a little homage to fake grass, old school AstroTurf,
and to the '80s,
'80s, all my favorite
worlds, absolutely.
I was gonna say all the things you love,
guys. I'll tell you what we should do. Let's just so we're clear, because we're a program that you know we value clarity, and let's make sure our fans know what each of us would prefer our Easter baskets to look like. We have a couple of months to do that, you know.
Yeah, I think we need to do that. We are Reformed guys after all. We are all about clarity and boundaries and definitions, and we need to let them know exactly what we want. So I want AstroTurf and football stuff. Ronald, what would you like in your Easter basket?
I would like I know that I would like an assortment of delicious chocolates, mainly of the caramel and nut variety, and maybe even some maybe even some, you know, if we're just going to go crazy, man, I would like some peanut caramel apples in there. I mean, I just want to just shoot the works for me. Shoot
so we're going off the whole 30 for the Easter bet.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is celebration. I go off the whole 30 for celebration. And we're at Midtown. I mean, this is live at Midtown. Midtown, boys. So we need to up the celebration.
You know? The section of the city of dreams. I mean, you know, what could be more exciting? Piper, Easter basket request for you?
Oh, man. That's a really good... I have no idea. I haven't gotten an Easter basket, like, ever in my life. Because my parents didn't do Easter baskets.
Oh, my gosh. So this is going to be an amazing moment for you, Pipe. This is like
I don't even know what's supposed to be in there. Dude, so maybe I need to put my faith in the listeners to give me whatever it's supposed to be.
The Pipers didn't do Easter baskets, John and Noel? Was this like a... Like,
well, you're aware that the Bible doesn't say anything about baskets or bunnies or photographs or chocolate. So
I am aware.
They didn't find a place in the hierarchy of celebration needs at the Piper household.
Now, was this like de jure? Was it written down, or was this just de facto, like, we don't do this? Or was there a big speech about it?
No speeches. I mean, Easter celebration was the same as, like, acknowledgement of Santa Claus. Like, why do you acknowledge a thing that's pretend? And it just never happened. There was just no...
I love it.
I don't remember ever having a conversation about it.
I love it. Well, Piper, this is going to be an Easter to remember for you, and that we're going to make up for lots of years of childhood for you, and provide you a lovely Easter basket in addition to all the lovely Redbud coffee that we'll be enjoying. And Piper, before
if that was in my Easter basket, I wouldn't complain because it's really good coffee.
It's such good coffee, dude. I've been enjoying it so much, and I want to hear your best work promo-wise on that. But before we do, I want to promo a little Barnabas Piper thing. I received in the mail yesterday two copies of Piper's newly re-released book, Help My Unbelief. Very, very good book. Very cool cover. The new publisher did an amazing job with it, Pipe. So yeah, just wanted to say thanks for the free books.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad they sent you two, but I'm not sure why, because there's only one of you. But now you have one to give away. Exactly. I bet it's because I accidentally put you on the list twice because I didn't read it very carefully.
I mean, I'll still be satisfied with my one copy, Pipe, when I'm grateful for it. So thank you.
Ronald,
yeah.
Pipe, we were about to make the same biblical joke, I bet, about cutting the book in half.
Okay, no, you go first. You cut the book in half. Yeah.
That's my joke. We could cut the book in half, Ronald.
I was actually going to make an Instagram joke. I'm like, I'm sure you can doctor the photo to make it look like there's two side by side or something like that. So
put the Folgers can in between it.
Yeah.
I love it. Piper, tell us about Redbud Coffee.
Yeah, Redbud Coffee is our new partnership with the Happy Rant. So if you go to redbudcoffee.com, pretty easy to remember, you can see all their roasts. I think they have 6 or 7 roasts available right now. I spent the morning today enjoying their Ethiopian roast, I think it is. And it's sort of a light to medium bodied one. It's really, really good. Mm-hmm. It is a small coffee roastery based in, I think it's smack dab in the middle of Illinois. So very middle America for us today. And it's family owned. It is I think it's two brothers and a dad and an uncle who do the majority of the business along with their employees. And then to make matters better, on top of really good coffee, they donate a portion of every purchase to an organization that works with victims of sex trafficking. So it's sort of a double partnership for us. So we get to support a great coffee company who is in turn supporting a great ministry. And for you listeners, if you use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout, you will get 10% off your purchase. So whether you buy one bag or 6 bags or whatever, 10% off of that. Use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout and enjoy some Redbud coffee as soon as you possibly can.
Piper, very good as always. Incredible promo work. And boys, something came up on our last episode that I think kind of like triggered the imagination of all three of us, which is why we're going to take a deep dive into it today. Today is going to be the bravery episode of the Happy Rant. So if you're curious about bravery, if you have questions about bravery, I have done what amounts to really the biggest amount of show prep I've ever done for this program.
It was remarkable, Big T. It was well done.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I mean,
are you feeling okay? Are you exhausted? How are you doing mentally after that?
Baby, I'm a little spent. I'm a little kind of tapped out. Absolutely. But I'm going to try to be a pro and pull it together
soldier
and do the
on.
Show.
Soldier on.
Yeah, soldier on bravely. I'm gonna wade into this topic after having written what amounts to just one medium-sized text about it. So that was the extent of the show prep. But no, this whole idea of our culture kind of yells and screams about bravery all the time, and you know, we call things brave, but it really got the three of us thinking about what is actually brave, who's allowed to be brave. We do make jokes from time to time on the podcast about being that we're middle-aged white Christian men, we're not allowed to be brave, which is a joke that we make, and it's a kind of ironic thing that we say. But I really want to suss that out today, and I want to lean into it and talk about why, and get maybe a working definition of bravery. So can we start there, boys? You think, like, it's 2020, it's a new year. We've kind of seen the landscape here for a while. So Pipe, what's our working definition of bravery?
Well, I have a question for clarity before we try to work this out. Is this a definition of bravery as it is commonly used, or what we think it actually is?
You know, why don't we do both? I think that would be helpful.
Because I think they're very different things.
I think they're exceedingly different things. I couldn't agree more.
So my best effort at bravery in terms of how it is commonly used is basically stating something that you believe that you know some portion of the population disagrees with, but your friends all agree with.
Okay. Yep. So in a sense, you're saying there's nothing on the line in terms of there's really nothing at stake for you.
You will receive criticism from strangers, possibly, depending on how many followers you have on social media.
But you'll be celebrated by the people.
Everybody who surrounds you all the time will be in your corner when you say this brave thing.
Mm. Yeah. Now, is there a sliding scale of like how satisfying that is over time? Like, let's say you've done that particular thing a handful of times in a week or a month. Does it get less satisfying after you do it a lot? I would think that it would.
See, it's very hard for me to say because since that's not a definition of bravery that I think is terribly brave, it's hard for me to imagine it being satisfying at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's if you boldly declare that the planet is getting warmer, or that you have a strong opinion about politics, or, you know, something about gender or sexuality, and everybody who you know applauds you, I don't know, it doesn't seem terribly satisfying. That just seems sort of like tweeting.
Yeah.
You said an opinion. Good job. So I have to imagine there is sort of a law of diminishing returns, which probably is why bravery has also gravitated towards crazy. Mm. You know, it's now braver to say more audaciously either inane or insane things.
Yeah.
And then be celebrated by all the people who know you.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think you're definitely onto something. And now what about an earnest or actual definition of bravery?
Ronnie, I leave earnest and actual to you.
Oh boy, I appreciate that. I would say, man, so yeah, I would say the actual way we would think of it, or maybe should think of it, is a willingness to behave courageously in the face of adversity.
Yeah.
That's just what came to mind.
No, that's really good, baby.
Which means there is something on the line.
Yes.
And it might be actually terrifying to do.
Absolutely. Which, hence the word bravery. There's a willingness there to put your put your neck out.
And to be clear, like there are actual brave people operating as we speak, right?
Absolutely.
And it's a horribly unpopular opinion for me to say this out loud, but I mean, there are soldiers doing brave things as we speak. There are, you know, policemen, firefighters. I mean, like all the kind of people that we grew up thinking are brave are still brave, because those jobs involve, if not daily, then the regular sort of stepping into fear and you know, moving forward anyway. So, still have that.
And I think even to Pipe's point, which I think was really good, I think people, even with their words, right, people that will have an opinion or have to say something that requires like a kind of courage that is going to cost them. I mean, there can be a bravery in how we say things and in words as well, I think.
You know? No. Yeah. I mean, yesterday, at the time we were recording this, Monday was MLK Day. Yeah. And so a couple days ago. And it's really striking how bravery has shifted over the years. Like when you read his quotes, people who would hang him to, who would have hanged him if they were alive at that time, can now quote him freely. Mm-hmm. So what he did courageously is now just sort of like it has almost become like the, they're like Hallmark movie quotes. They're just sort of inspirational, yeah. Which is sad. So what was bravery is now just sort of commonplace inspiration. And so, yeah, it's really interesting how words shift over time too, in terms of what is courageous and what's not. You know, he was risking his life literally to say things and to confront injustice. We can quote him now freely, confidently, and honestly not having any idea what he stood for at all. And it's kind of, there's a real dissonance there.
Yeah, it's kind of American cultural fortune cookie wisdom type of thing, which by and large we as a culture have done that with scripture too. I mean, if there are people who want to, you know, remake scripture in their own kind of inspirational image and neuter it of all its power, you know, I think the culture has been about that too over the years. Let me ask you guys this, because this is a two-part question. Part one is, do you think in our tribe there are still occasions to be courageous, like be it in writing or speaking? I mean, I guess where that question's coming from is the sense that like all the statements have kind of already been made. I feel like reform guys, by and large, have already come down on like all the different sides of issues that they're going to come down on. So, like, what are the occasions to be courageous, I guess, that are left for reform guys? And that's enough of a question. I'll ask the second part later. Ronald, man of the cloth, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I always think that I would be of the opinion that there's always something that needs to be said that isn't being said that would require a kind of bravery to say. And so if we back up from like reformdom, I mean, again, we could spend the next couple of hours like picking out little things that people are just sort of like they're comfortable with, they shouldn't be comfortable with, but for somebody to make like a statement about it and to say, you know what, not only am I making a statement about this, but I refuse to interact with this. I refuse to be a part of this because I feel like overall it's something that's, let's just say in terms of our tribe, it's damaging to our tribe, right? Mm-hmm. So in other words, here's like something that could be brave for somebody. Somebody that's like an A-list speaker, gets invited to the conferences, is looked upon as a celebrity, has major influence on all the social media platforms. A brave thing for somebody like that to do would be to stand up and say, this is damaging and we are seeing like the ramifications and the effects of this because of what it's become in our particular tribe. So I'm making a commitment right now to tell you that I think this is wrong and I'm pulling out. I'm not going to be a part of this anymore. I'm going to pull back my influence, my speaking. That could be something that was brave because basically they would be making a statement that would be condemning in some ways, but then also sticking their neck out saying, and by the way, I'm not just saying it, I'm going to live this thing out. And I think that's just one tiny example. Maybe you guys even disagree with that, but that would be one example that I think somebody could throw out there tribally that would be a brave position to take.
And to be clear, that will absolutely never happen.
But we did. Francis Chan did it, which leads me to the monkey wrench I was about to throw into this thing, which is that I don't know how to be brave with a statement today because everything can be posturing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right.
So since all the private stuff is public now, to withdraw from the public eye is brand building if you want it to be.
Sure.
So you're gaining something personal from doing something quote unquote risky potentially. And that is not a statement about Francis Chan. I have no idea what his motives were. I'm assuming they were good. But just to say that it's no matter where you swing on the pendulum, mm-hmm. it can be an image thing, a brand thing.
Well, and what's that I think we're always doing the persona calculus on that stuff in our heads before we make any kind of a statement one way or the other. And it's I would love to live in a world in which I don't do that or people don't do that, but
yeah. Well, I mean, we can't help where the chips. So if somebody's brave, the chips are always going to fall someplace given the act of bravery, right? So if somebody is, if somebody is sincere in what they do in terms of how they're trying to live or act out their, you know, whatever they're asserting in terms of their bravery, I mean, the chips are going to fall where they fall. And so if somebody, so going back to my example, if somebody does that and then their celebrity increases, but they have detached themselves from it, then they're still living out, you know, they're still living out, you know, a willful, courageous.
Well, and maybe the, and I agree, baby, that that would be courageous in our context. And it's a really good example. And maybe the actual courage in that would come in just saying no to a whole bunch of stuff and not making any statements. Like, you know, not coming out and saying, hey, world, I'm not doing Together for the Gospel this year because I want to focus on my church ministry. Rather, you just say no to Together for the Gospel. You say no when your agent brings you new book, you know, opportunities, and you do just focus on your church ministry.
It would just be like a whatever happened to him kind of a
thing. It would, but and I think that would be okay, right? I mean, that would be good. It would be courageous in the sense that, you know, you would kind of, you would count the cost with your wife, with the elders at your church, and go, this is an investment I really need to make in, like, the actual people in my actual life rather than, like, the faux people in my Twitter life or my conference attending life or whatever.
Yeah, and if that was like it's a convictional thing, I think. So bravery always has to be a convictional thing. So for that person, if that's what they felt like God was leading them into, it would be an act of bravery for them. But it would also make other people think, hold on, like, how does that cause me now to, like, reflect and think on what I'm doing if I'm in a similar position?
You know, I don't know. Sure. No, totally. And I think Piper's point is amazing in the sense that, and I want to ask you guys this, you know, we're all roughly the same age, Pipe's a little bit younger, but, do you remember a time in your life or like your parents' lives or whatever, where stuff got done and decisions got made, especially professionally, without like persona and brand calculus being a part of the equation? Pipe, you've got the most famous dad among the three of us, slash the only famous dad.
Well, listeners, let me tee up an episode we did in December when I interviewed Ted and Bonnie about their dads, and they may not be famous, but it was awesome to hear about them, so you should go back and listen to that if you didn't. Now, to answer your question, it has been really striking over the course of the last, like, 20, 25 years to watch how people perceive the decisions that my dad makes.
I bet.
So as far as I can tell, and how he has had to calculate how people perceive, which is not so much persona as it is just the recognition of criticism or the recognition of influence because of numbers, those kinds of things. So my dad early on, and this is public, so this isn't, I'm not, you know, there's no great reveal here. Early on, he decided he didn't want to keep any of the money that he made off of his books or his speaking. So, you know, originally it just went to the church.
Yeah.
And then once Desiring God started, it went to Desiring God. And then, you know, over time, the sort of the contracts and business model has changed. And now, like, that just gets paid directly to Desiring God, and he doesn't see any of it.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that he just did quietly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I knew about that till I was heading off to college. Mm-hmm. And that's because we were filling out FAFSA forms together.
Yeah.
And so he was kind of explaining how how his income looked one way when in reality it was something else because, you know, the money was in his name but was all kind of passed along and whatever else.
Yeah.
But now that's a thing that is a, like, they don't use it this way, but I have seen it. I've seen other people use it as sort of a, almost a marketing point.
Yeah.
Well, John Piper doesn't, whatever, as if that's like a moral standard for other authors or right. Something along those lines. And so, yeah, it is, I don't know how that's affected his decision making. Maybe this is sort of what you guys are talking about, where there's a quiet conviction to just continue to do this mm-hmm. and not to make statements about it. Now, they've made statements, they being Desiring God, of why they give everything away.
Yeah.
You know, all sermons have been available. You can download PDFs of my dad's books, mm-hmm. et cetera. at no cost. But even that's was kind of done because there was sort of a criticism of them or a comparison of them versus, like, Tim Keller's church sells his sermons.
Yeah.
Or ministry there. I don't know if it's attached directly to the church or what it is. And so people are like, well, he does it this way and he does it this way. So there's, you know, there kind of had to be a statement made. But just the difference between you are capable to do something of conviction in private versus when you do something of conviction, you then have to publicize your reasons for it. You have to face either criticism or praise for it. Like, my dad's gotten more praise than criticism for how he handles that.
Yeah.
But that's not beneficial. Praise is an ego booster in that sense. And it takes giving from a place of a good heart to potentially giving for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And so it really does get confused when it shifts from the private conviction mm-hmm. to the public persona, or at least public eye.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. And I think too, like, as you were speaking, it begs the question for me, like, I don't know what our listenership is like. A lot of them are pastors or seminary students or people in ministry, but a lot of them aren't. And as you were talking, like, I couldn't help but think about my dad, who, you know, he flew airplanes, and, you know, Ron's dad ran a trucking company. So for guys of a certain era with certain jobs that weren't persona type jobs, right? Like, what's the courageous moment? You know, maybe in a 2020 context, they were letting everybody know their political convictions or whatever, but they certainly weren't in, you know, 1993. I'm guessing there were a lot of kind of quiet opportunities for our dads to be courageous that the world didn't know about, because persona stuff wasn't a part of the decision-making process back then, and especially for guys in a certain field.
It leads me to believe, so thinking about guys like your dad's, or the way it was for my dad prior to internet fame,
yep.
that a lot of bravery today is doing the same things that have always been brave. So something that requires courage, something that risks a personal cost,
yeah.
something that is right even in the face of adversity, and absolutely not seeking applause for it.
Yeah.
So the idea that you will do the brave thing and nobody besides God will ever know.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's something ethical at work, which is a decision I'm sure both your dads had to make it
yep.
probably 1,000 times. What's the ethical decision?
Yep.
You know, when there's a way to earn more, steal more, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had Rosaria Butterfield speak at our church. So she's an author and speaker, but she wrote a book called The Gospel Comes with a House Key, which is about hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and as she shared stories of hospitality and kind of how it started with just their family's conviction to be a good neighbor to a man across the street who was reclusive and difficult and ultimately turned out to be a meth dealer. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, it's kind of a whole blow up. But there was just a quiet, convictional privacy to it that we are going to love our neighbor because we want to love our neighbor because that's right.
Yeah.
And I heard that and I thought that's bravery in a sense, because
yeah.
there's a personal cost of time and money. And they don't really know the guy that well. It could be risky.
Sure.
And they're not, you know, they're not posting it on social media, you know, had our neighbor Rick over for dinner, such a great time kind of thing.
right.
I'm like, I think that might be kind of where bravery lies now.
I agree. And I you know, as you were saying that, there's something of, you know, not doing your praying in public so that, you know, the world can see it and praise it, kind of a motif in that I like. And I think I'm always attracted to that, you know, yet I fight the kind of preening, peacocking impulse in myself that says, you know, from time to time, I'm going to check and see what people are saying about me, which makes me sick. I mean, it's gross and I hate that I do it, but yeah, I find myself more and more like attracted to that ethos of, you know, what did life look like for our dads in a pre-internet fame kind of environment. And it looks good, right? I feel like it would feel good to make choices based more on conviction than on how is this going to play, right? How am I going to look? Which is just where we're at. Boys, I have another question. And this is one that I think about a lot in light of, you know, the kinds of media that gets celebrated in our tribe, but also, and I should apologize for the amount of time I spend kind of low key crapping on the school that my kids go to. I really do like it, but, or else I wouldn't pay the exorbitant amount of money to spend them, to send them there each year. But,
to be fair, we also like the tribe we're part of.
Dude, we do.
For the most part.
We
There's
do.
Just a lot
we
of
do.
Weird stuff in it.
Well, and one of the weird inconsistencies at the school is, you know, part of the curriculum is reading all of these classical stories of bravery, right? So you're getting Lord of the Rings and you're getting all the Shakespeare and you're getting, you know, all these kind of like age-old tales of bravery, yet, you know, there are very few kind of tangible opportunities to practice it, to try it out, to be brave, especially as, you know, more and more we're kind of circling up the wagons even tighter and just trying to sort of move our kids through life without any opportunity for sanctification. There seems to be a disconnect to me between our tribe's fascination with bravery and their actual like willingness to try it from time to time. What do you make of that, Ronald?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Good radio. good radio. I realize it's...
Big T, rephrase the question a little bit. Give me another angle.
I guess the question is, and this is me doing my like straw man thing that I've done on here before, but like, so your reform dude, you know, gets home from work, drops his, you know, $700 leather bag onto the floor, flops down in his study, you know, whips out the Winston Churchill biography or the like General George Patton biography, and you know and these are guys who by and large aren't going to be leading anyone anywhere, right? They're never going to lead Great Britain into battle against like a fascist dictator. They're not leading. And in fact, their lives by and large should be about like service and humility and, you know, but yet
are
there's
you saying
this upset-
that pastoral life isn't like what Winston Churchill did, Big T? Is that what
maybe,
you're trying to,
you know,
is that
I've
what you're aiming at with
pastors?
That?
Yeah. I'm not sure their lives are, you know, a lot like Winston Churchill.
It's not like leading troops against, like, you know, like communist regimes and like,
exactly. I don't know.
Nazi regimes and
baby, maybe the polity of your church is structured to look a whole lot like the British Parliament during the time of Winston Churchill.
Yeah, they look at me like, hey, that's not a pastor, that's a prime minister, and he's leading us against.
You guys do that thing where you put on like powdered wigs and shout at each other and everybody gets really inspired.
Absolutely, man. Right.
He refers to all of his other fellow leaders as the Right Honorable Gentleman.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Oh, I love
man.
It. I love it. You know what I'm saying, though? I mean, it's this weird thing where, like, yes, I'm going to read all these accounts of bravery all the livelong day, but I'm not going to let my kid play public school sports or city league anything, or, you know what I'm saying? I'm just going to wrap them in, like, Christian bubble wrap and keep them under lock and key for 18 years.
It seems like
a disconnect to me, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's like we're really wrapped up in personas, and we really are we're like a people that have been given over to fantasy over reality, mm-hmm. you know, in a lot of ways, I think. And so I think we all want to think that what we're doing is far more meaningful and important than what we might even like convictionally like think it is, even if it is, right? Like if we're doing important work in any of the like areas of influence that God's given us or those spheres, there's a part of us that thinks, yeah, but it's not that. And it's not as important as that over there. And so I think we almost have to create something out of something to give it more meaning rather than just, I think, trusting God that the work he's given us, the one talent, two talent, five, 10 talents, like that is the work that was given by God to us. And it's important because of who gave it to us, not because of actually like, you know, what it amounts to in the eyes of the world. And so I think we just struggle with that. So then when we get, when our commentaries are Winston Churchill biographies, you know, on Sundays and we're those guys, you know, it's like, I think we're trying to draw something from something, again, that goes back to just, wanting to create a persona that, doesn't need to be created because technically speaking, I mean, allegedly speaking, as Reformed folk, you know, we believe in this thing called God's sovereignty, and he's over everything, and he's purposed everything, and we should be content and happy with the place that he's put us, with the purpose he's given us. And so we get screwed up about that. So we get as jacked up as everybody else does about those things. But we have, I think what you're saying though, Big T, is we have ways of trying to like kind of walk around that or adopt other things that make it something it isn't, right?
Yeah, no, that's a phenomenal point. And I think we just romanticize things.
Exactly.
You know, like when my dad was flying freight to Detroit, he wasn't pretending he was in Top Gun. But
he didn't nickname himself Maverick.
I mean, he didn't nickname himself Maverick and call the other guy
Maverick
Iceman,
Cluck,
you know, on the radio. Yeah, Maverick Cluck, which was going to be the name of my first kid. Yeah, but we went a different direction.
You pivoted the last minute.
Thanks, Double K. You saved him.
Exactly. Exactly. Iceman Cluck. I like that too. Piper, you were going to make a salient point before I hijacked.
Well, I don't know how salient it is. I hope so. I think this matches or pairs well with what Ron was just saying in terms of the whole the persona thing. And at the risk of beating a dead horse, I feel like, nothing brave happens on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that so much of our, just as we've had this conversation, I keep thinking about what does it look like as a Christian person to be brave? And I can't think of a single really brave thing that you do on the internet. Mm. You know, it doesn't matter what article you write, what stance you take, like there's just minimal cost to it.
Yeah.
The brave things only happen in person, like the really, truly brave things, you know, whether it's neighborliness or, you know, evangelism or helping somebody in need. Like, yes, you will take criticism on the internet, but if you turn it off, the criticism goes away. Mm-hmm. It just like, oh, look, I left social media. All the critics disappeared.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of where we go wrong. So thinking about the Reform guy who loves the biographies, that transfers into public platform bravery, which isn't brave at all.
Yeah.
Really. Whereas those things, you know, if there's an interaction with a neighbor or you have to make risky decisions about what schools to put your kids in or how to raise them or, you know, marriage is difficult or whatever. Like those are the places where you make the decisions that are or not actually brave in a relational context. And so I think part of the problem that we have with defining bravery is that we have we've just shifted everything to what does it look like publicly, which then undermines everything that's actually brave.
Well, here's my question for you boys, and that's a great point, Pipe. My question is this. I mean, Do we need to look at bravery in the same way that like we would look at something like a miracle, where like how we define it in and of itself is that it's not normative. Bravery in and of itself is something that has to come at moments that require it, which aren't going to be every time we like click on social media and type something to like, you know, get us likes or get into arguments. I mean, so like if you look at your own life, I mean, is there anything you've done in your own life that's brave or that you can see in the future that's going to require bravery? And maybe you do and maybe you don't, but if you do, it's not going to be something that happens like on a regular basis, right? I mean, the very definition of itself means I have to, like, there's going to be those moments that's going to require me to have willful, courageous behavior because I'm facing some kind of adversity that requires it. But that doesn't happen. We don't get to like manufacture that, number one, to Piper's point. Mm. And then number two, it's not normative. It's not something that happens all the time. And so how do we suss that out even in our own lives? Like, do you guys see something is there a moment in your life that you would say that was bravery, or even a moment in the future where you can say that's going to require bravery for me?
Well, I think that's a really hard question to answer because I think so much of what we've confused, we being, you know, society or maybe just Christian society as a whole, is we've decided that if you do something right, it is brave. Right. Mm. So if you do something according to conviction, it is brave. So,
and by the way, you know, I'm the arbiter of what's right all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the Christian side of things, we would try to stack that up against the biblical standard. Societally, we just say like my convictions, my truth. If I do something according to my truth, it's brave. Well, by that standard, every day you do brave things. which, to Ron's point, then waters down Brave to nothing.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, I think if we want to define, like, if we want to kind of recapture some definition of bravery and move it more towards the heroic, mm-hmm. then it means you're doing something at great personal cost or risk,
yeah.
usually for the benefit of somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a, yeah, and those moments don't happen often. Like, you even think about those biographies. Those are people who are, you know, right place, right time, mm-hmm. sacrificial, leading somebody, you know, or a whole group of people. There's a lot more going on there than I spoke my convictions
yeah.
that may or may not be true.
Well, and there were tens of thousands of hours of work that nobody saw, so that, you know, you could perform well in the one moment, you know, and I think that's part of it too. And to Ron's question, which is fantastic, and I do think it's a great point that we can't necessarily, like, engineer these things on a daily basis. I don't know that, apart from things that happened in athletics and apart from confessing sin to people in my life and my church under the conviction of the Holy Spirit, I'm not sure I've ever done anything courageous. You know what I mean? Like, actually courageous. And the confessing sin part, if it was very costly, and it felt very costly. Hmm. But again, I felt empowered and propped up by the Spirit, you know, which I think is obviously an experience that's germane to believers, you know, and it's something that we're thankful for. In otherwise, shit. Like, yeah, maybe when I was a freshman and Andrew Romine was a senior and he was a giant and I was a shrimp, and, you know, my decision was, do I run at him and hit him in a drill, or do I fake an injury and decide to be done with football? Like, I think you're courageous in those moments, but they're pretty stark, you know, and they're fewer and further between when you get old. Hmm. Yeah.
Do we even get to label ourselves brave?
Oh, I we feel don't. Like
maybe.
Yeah, we don't.
Well, no, I don't mean we, the three middle-aged white dudes, because yeah. we don't do any brave things.
No.
I mean, if any human being in the world, if any human being in the world says, I am brave, or I was brave.
Yeah.
Aside from a child, because a child is trying to learn how to do risky things and kind of like where is virtue?
Yeah. Because,
you know, a kid will be like, I was brave today, Mom, and that probably deserves to be celebrated. But if a grown-up says, you know, I did a brave thing, I feel like...
Yeah, it's not incredibly brave.
I don't know. I feel like the undermine... Because what you're talking about, Ted, even the, you know, the confessing of sins and stuff, that's there's a conviction yeah. laid on you, and you did the thing you knew you had to do. I doubt you were thinking in the moment, this is really courageous.
No.
You were probably thinking, this is really scary.
Yeah, it's
and then
it's
you
really
just did
scary,
the thing
but,
you needed to do.
But I have to do it or else I'm going to die. Yeah. Like... that's how it felt, you know, and that's the Spirit, that's the Hound of Heaven. And that's different than, yeah, like, even if I gave Ron a kidney, which God forbid, you know, I hope I don't have to give Ronald a kidney, but if I did, that was a tepid, that was like a very lukewarm offer to give you a kidney at some point
that.
In the future, Ron.
I appreciate yeah. that. Maybe you would do that someday. Thank you.
Yeah, I probably don't even have the same blood type. You're fine.
But if I then, like, posted a picture of me, I don't know, in the recovery room and like in the blue gown or whatever, and giving like a feeble thumbs up, you know, hashtag just gave Ronald a kidney. I don't know, you know, that smacks of personal work, but it is courageous.
Well, like, I mean, yeah, it's just like, it's truly great men don't self-identify as great. And it goes back to what
absolutely.
Jesus said, which
yeah.
is the greatest among you will be the greatest servant among you. So it's like people that don't even, it's like people acting out of a conviction based on their desire to care for others more than themselves, yeah. and whether they ever get any props for it or not. I mean, you know, you're going to be brave, you know, to make this kind of a statement, quote unquote, you're going to be brave in the eyes of God. You know, you're going to be great yeah. in the eyes of God rather than men. So, I mean, I guess yeah. from a Christian perspective, bravery is something that it can't be sought after as much as you are just living out convictional Christian, you know, principles as a way to yeah. serve the Lord, serve others. And then someday maybe somebody will go, hey, by the way, that time that guy did that thing, that was a brave thing. And we should try to yeah. imitate and mimic that. Because again, that would be part of the character of Christ that we all want to adopt and have grow inside of us. So, I mean, as Christians, mm-hmm. like certainly it can't be something that we're manufacturing, you know?
Yeah.
It just
yeah.
can't be.
No, amen, man, for sure. That's a good word, and probably a great word to end on, boys. Pipe, do you have anything more to add to the bravery discussion?
Nah, I mean, I'm sure we could talk about this all day, but I like Ron's ending. Let's land
too,
it there,
man. Thanks, boys. That's really nice. Good. Yeah, yeah, baby. That was brave of you to say that.
Thank you. I feel brave, but I don't.
Oh wait, you said it was brave. I don't know if it is anymore.
Oh, shoot.
If you label something brave, does it undermine the bravery?
Here's what we'll do: everyone fight about it on the internet, and that will solve it for sure.
I got to stay silent. You know, I'll just be there. You know what? We can all suss this out live in Midtown, and everybody can decide. You know,
baby, live in Midtown with our Easter baskets.
That's going to be big. Amazing. That's going to be big. It's epic.
Piper's first Easter, you know, I can't wait.
Baby's first Easter. Take pictures.
Oh, it's going to be incredible.
That'll be the subtitle of the live event, boys. Live at Midtown, Pipe's first Easter. That's epic, man.
Oh, I love it. Always branding. You know, I mean, we can't help ourselves.
Always.
We're a product of our time. And
oh, we're so brave.
We're brave men who are doing their branding and talking into microphones for an hour every week. But boys, we have, we've done what we always do. In that we've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Feeling stressed? Let's take better care of you. I'm Bonnie Gray, the host of Breathe, the Stress Less podcast. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.